Hey, Phil, let go of my ego. Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
Oh, for crying out loud. It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
I was talking about waffles.
Knock me over with a feather. I feel like giving. Much too much to keep together. For this huddled mass of love, I don't have to say a thing, 'cause you know. There are times of late I'd give you.
Well, there we are. It is the Midweek Drive, and you've just been listening to an awesome number, In a Swan Dive. You might say perfect for the University of Lincoln, of course, because the swan is obviously on our coat of arms. The swan is very much related to Lincoln, England, as opposed to Lincoln, Nebraska. And when you add to the fact it's also been produced and delivered and, of course, performed, as we've just heard, by the awesome Pamela Suman. Inevitably, it was a fantastic time to be had by all. Pamela is with us at present. Pamela, how are you? And congratulations on another fabulous piece of music.
Thank you, Alex. I'm great. It's actually beautiful outside. It's like a summer's day in New York City.
Well, that's always good. Now, one of the things that I was amazed at to start off with was you actually caught COVID whilst recording in a swan dive. So, talk us through the process. How did you actually work through the thing there? Were you socially isolated? What was the challenge that you were actually faced with? And indeed, that whole systems of how you managed to capture the whole thing, or was it all part of the intention in a swan dive needed to actually have a singer with COVID?
Actually, I must confess, I was in a bit of COVID denial. I think that my husband Jerry Leonard was on tour, so there was no one to really check me. And I had a bit of a sore throat, but I had this studio day planned, and Forest Sound is an incredible studio. Hector Castillo, who's won many, many Latin Grammys, and who's a brilliant studio owner and engineer, and Glenn Forrest, who put together this very rare studio, because there aren't many studios like that still around in New York. I got some studio time gifted, which was really wonderful, and I was going to work with this new engineer called Andres Cotin. So I didn't want to blow the date, and we were the only two in the studio. I told him my throat was sore. I didn't even think that it might be COVID, which is really stupid and irresponsible, I admit, but it was so painful to sing. It hurt so badly to sing, but I thought, I'm not gonna, musicians are stupid this way. I mean, I don't want to blame everyone. This musician is stupid that way. I just, the show must go on, So I recorded, and it was the most painful vocal recording of my life. And then I think I did go home and test negative, and then I tested again and I was positive. Interestingly enough, Andres never caught COVID from me.
Well, there we are. You see, obviously, the universe functioning in particular interesting ways. Paul Murphy, of course, fresh from a New York Real Talk, to be precise, Paul X. Murphy. This is really beautiful work, sublime, thoughtful, and poetic. It's expansive but deeply intimate at the same time, and the voice is truly unique. Clearly, are you going to be looking to actually catch some kind of bacteria before you start singing any song? I mean, that could be a dangerous precedent you're setting, Pamela.
Well, it was really interesting. I did receive a few comments about how my vocal tone was really great. And no, I wouldn't advise anyone do that, and nor would I. I'll tell you what, if I ever get a sore throat like that again, I'm not going to see anyone. I'm going to get tested straight away, because now I know what it could be. But no, I mean, they say that people sing better with a cold, and I've heard that be true, but it's quite a different story, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure in terms of how much one should read into that because there are certain urban myths which probably should just remain myths in a whole range of ways. Because how are you going to actually cope when you're sneezing as well? I mean, it's not going to it's not good, you know. I mean, unless you're actually doing some sort of pepper song, it's not going to help at all. Liliana Richter says, "Stupenda sensualité." Which is clearly Italian for fantastic and sensual and absolutely amazing, which is pretty much what Abigail McGibbon says, and Rick Shields and Suzanne Hillary. So there's a lot of love out there in terms of what's coming through as far as social media already, Pam. It is available, of course, on Bandcamp and areas with respect to that. I've gone through another website to actually purchase it because what the hey, let's go for that basis. In terms of obviously getting the sound out there, let's talk a little bit about the track itself now, because it is mellow, it is reflective, it's dealing with a whole range of other areas within that. What was behind your thoughts process when you were composing this?
Well, I'm sure a lot of songwriters would agree that there's a method of writing, which is basically, I heard a really interesting talk with Bill Withers when he was still with us around the time of the Oscars, and he came and he was talking about he'd written a song that had gotten into a movie. I can't remember any of this, the details, but he was talking about, he said something really great. He said, if I feel inspired, I sit down and I write. If I don't feel inspired, I don't sit down and I don't write. And I definitely follow that methodology. So I think it's the subconscious speaking to the conscious, and that is profound. I have found through many years of songwriting, because it becomes quite prescient. You know, there are those that say that everything goes in from the moment that we are conceived, and there's so much about the world that we actually understand even before our cognitive brains have gotten there. There's, you know, we're absorbing everything that goes in. In this case, there was a pretty big life change for me that was just around the corner, and I was sensing it. I was feeling, you know, something ain't right. There's something going on, and it's bigger than me. And sure enough, it happened. But the song was written before I actually found out all that it was. So I think sometimes when people feel overwhelmed by life, overwhelmed by something nameless or something they could name, it's that feeling you get where some people call it flooded, some people call it frazzled. It's when you just feel like you can't make sense of anything. That's how I was feeling, and it was pretty huge. And thankfully, I have some incredible people in my life that I am so thankful for. And I was writing to one of them through the song, basically, you know, saying basically, sometimes, you know, you know.
Following this little piece, we've got a feature with Emma Marsh, who's from the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. But I think it's worthwhile noting that even though Emma will be talking about our feathered friends, and indeed that'll be followed by Claire Williams talking about grief counselling, swan dive, it's not really related to the avian population. It's swan dive, as in presumably going down and not knowing whether you're going to come up again, perhaps.
I suppose you could see it that way. Again, it begs the question, you know, should one and should I look deeper into my song titles and my song lyrics and be a little concerned with myself for writing them? Because really, I just let it flow. And I think there's a little bit of a fear on my part that if I get in the way and try and figure out what's going on or just how dark it is, it might be a scary place. The thing about any kind of outlet, any kind of creative outlet or physical outlet, is that it enables people to have a place to go. So, for example, if I'm overwhelmed or sad, I can write a song and something comes out and it's a sort of therapy or a church, if you will. And say, I'm so thankful. The older I get, the more thankful I am that I have that place to go.
And ultimately, once the book, the text, the play, the movie, the song has been released into the world, clearly it can be decoded in so many ways. That's part and parcel of the whole thing. Who knows, maybe in years to come, we'll be decoding in a swan dive in an episode of Resonance Rewind, where we actually turn to lyrics and song music, but that's for another time, for another place. So in terms of that, is this going to be part of an album which you're gradually releasing stage by stage, or is it a case of no, the model for musicians in the 21st century is we release it a single at a time and see how things go from there?
Well, it is a bit confusing, as Jerry would say. I just like to I like to create more options. So, in the spirit of that, what's happening with this song is because it was initially intended as a recording, and Andres was simply recording me. I no longer use his first name because his production name, his professional name, is Music and Noise, and so. We started a project together called Subtle Paranoia on pretty much not on that day, but maybe on the second session after I no longer had COVID, and we got together to work. And I love the way that he works because he so carefully considered everything that I was saying. You know, we're saying a song like this, it's not a big rock number. It's definitely should be sculpted with sonics. So what we're doing is he and I are going to be putting out an EP of about three songs. It's sometime in 2024, but I love the intention, you know, how it came out, how truthful the song came out is something that I would love to include on my upcoming record. So I have a new solo, if you will, album called Pink Flamingos, the title song of which you heard that you have been very instrumental in, and we have featured on this show. The album is going to be called Pink Flamingos, and the song In a Swan Dive is going to be included on that album.
And I've got to ask the question, are we going to have an avian theme to them? I mean, are you going to go for time with golden eagles? Are we going to be looking at the sparrow song? Are we going to be looking at the magpie connection? I mean, there are so many sort of ways you could actually have here. I mean, there's obviously Blackbird from the Beatles over.
Well, again, you are just, you have some sort of you must have a little magical eight ball or a crystal ball, something that you have, Alex, in amongst your wherever you record these things from, because you seem to be able to dig right into something prescient, that another connection yet that has yet to be made. Turns out that I didn't know that someone that I was about to meet, who's one of the most important people in my life now, loves birds. I had no idea this person loved birds. And I had written another song, yet another song during this time called Hummingbird, not consciously again. There is a bird thing going on, but I never thought about it. And this incredible woman that I now know is obsessed with birds. Who knew?
Which, as I say, is why we're following this with a feature with Emma Marsh from the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. So it just goes to show how wonderful the whole process happens to be. Pamela, it's been awesome connecting with the good self. Delighted to obviously promote this particular brand new single release, which is out there. We've heard it once, we're going to hear it again, obviously. So would you like to formally introduce the next incarnation that we're about to hear, which of course is available for purchase through all the usual online sites? Over to you, Pamela.
Yes, on the upcoming Pamela Sue Mann Pink Flamingos album and also Subtle Paranoia, I'd like to introduce In a Swan Dive.
Knock me over with a feather. I feel like giving much too much to keep together. For this huddled mass of love, I don't have to say a thing, 'cause you know there are times of late I'd give you.
It's always nice to have some good news, especially when it revolves around our feathered friends as well. And the
Absolutely.
fact that the WWF and the RSPB have actually launched a £1 million community fund for nature, supported by Aviva, is certainly good news. And to actually talk us through that, we're delighted to welcome the Executive Director of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, that of course is Emma Marsh. How are you, Emma?
I'm really good. Hello.
Hey, so great to connect with your good self. And yeah, at a time where we seem to be having an awful lot of negative news stories coming across, this is quite an important and significant aspect to actually deal with the Save Our Wildlife Isles Community Fund.
Absolutely. Community groups and volunteers are doing incredible work across the UK to protect and restore our wildlife. And we're constantly amazed and inspired by the stories of how people are making a difference. And every single effort counts. So today we are launching a brand new Save Our Wild Isles Community Fund. So we're doing so with Aviva and WWF, and obviously ourselves, RSPB, and giving £1 million to help community groups across the UK, particularly in those in more deprived areas, take action for nature in their local patch.
I'm surprised to see that since 1970, over 40% of UK species populations have declined. Indeed, that's 49% for Scotland since 1994. We were talking in another program a wee while back about how rewilding is one of those key things. Is that also going to be part of this particular campaign?
Oh, it's absolutely whatever you can do to bring nature back. That's all we're asking. So, we are living in one of the most nature depleted countries in the world, and we are absolutely pushing the nature that's left to the brink of survival. And so, we've seen 38 million birds vanish from our skies in the last 50 years. And on top of that, 97% of our wildflower meadows have been lost since the 1930s. So, we're really keen to make sure that any kind of action, whether it's planting a wild flower patch or planting a big community orchard, making that patch at school look better, making kind of a wasteland at the university look better, all those places in our local patches, we can make much more wild, and then we can make sure that we're giving a home and shelter to nature.
The Save Our Wild Isles Community Fund is actually going to be doubling every pound raised to £2 for every pound raised for each project. So again, there's an incentive there, certainly for community groups, presumably to work together to deal with everything from, as you said, the local village pond or indeed places within the city as well.
Absolutely. So, if you're a community group in the UK that's inspired to take action and you just needed that funding boost to make it happen, you can apply today. And if you're eligible, the criteria are all on the website, then you can launch your own crowdfunding campaign pretty much immediately. And then our Save Our Wild Isles Community Fund will give you £2 for every £1 raised to help your project reach its fundraising target quicker. And the matching applies to each individual donation up to £250, and with a total match available of £5,000 per project. So if you're able to raise £2,500, we'll give you another £5,000. So you'll have £7,500 to go out and truly change your wild patch.
And those projects can be literally everything from engaging with children to make schools wildlife friendly, to indeed taking part in citizen science projects. Would that be including obviously doing various counting aspects in terms of how many birds are actually still there, or is that a different project entirely?
No, absolutely. So if you want to know in your patch how many birds you've got of a certain species, particularly if you know that they're endangered, you can find that out from talking to your local council or your local conservation group. That could be a really big way of going, we've got this many house sparrows and we want to really increase them. So as part of this, we'd like a bit of funding to do the research, which we'll carry out, but we need those tools to do so. And then we're going to put in place some of the measures to bring those house sparrows back. I don't use house sparrows as a kind of a loose word. They're really, really suffering at the moment. We're really trying to make sure that they're okay because since the mid-1970s, house sparrow numbers in rural England have nearly halved, whilst numbers in towns and cities have declined by 60%. And we've now got house sparrows on the red list of endangered species in the UK. So I think that just shows just how important all these actions are.
Yes, I think we get so used to seeing pigeons that we forget that sparrows obviously used to be very popular as well, and not seen as frequently as perhaps they once were. There's clearly an undeniable link between the environment and our mental health and well-being. Is this something else that the World Wildlife Fund and obviously the RSPB are also very conscious of, that getting involved with series like this and nature events can be very beneficial for our postal health?
Oh, completely. Nature is our life support system, which can be a really fancy way of simply saying it provides the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink. It's so beneficial to our health, our well-being, and really vital to the fight against climate change. We know that when we go out into nature, and that could be a local pocket park, it could be a kind of rolling fields, whether it's city or rural, that green space close to nature, our heart rates reduce and we just become so much calmer. Personally, I find it's the space I do my thinking. It's the only place I can do my thinking. So we really want to make sure that more and more people can get access to nature-rich green space. And that's particularly important in more deprived areas where actually we find that there is much less access to green space. And it shouldn't be the case that only more wealthy areas have got that access.
avivacommunityfunds.co.uk/save-our-wild-isles is the best place to go, presumably, for further information.
Yes, absolutely. Or simply search Save Our Wild Isles Community Fund and you'll get all the information. But do so today.
And in terms of the RSPB, again, presumably a search engine, will provide you with all the details in terms of the excellent work you're doing there.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, just search RSPB and you'll get loads of information, both around the work, the science work we do, our international work, but also how you can make a difference at home. And it'll give some great ideas for the fund too.
Excellent. Emma Marsh, RSPB Executive Director. Keep looking after those sparrows, Emma.
I will. Thank you very much.
Well, clearly, we've recently seen, in terms of celebrity, the passing of the comedian, of course, Paul O'Grady, and there are an awful lot of people who are expressing grief with respect to that. But is there a time limit when it comes to grief? I mean, 30% of UK adults believe that grief should last no longer than 6 months. Is it as easy as that? Can we actually just compartmentalize to the extent of saying, okay, we don't have to do anything else from that point of view? Well, we're delighted to welcome to the program now, Ace Soul Claire Williams, to share with us her own thoughts on this particular aspect. Claire, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, good to connect with a good self. But fascinated by this whole aspect that suggests that, well, yeah, I mean, every single person is different, and presumably everybody experiences grief in a different way.
Absolutely, yes. Like you pointed out, the study we carried out at Therapy Finders found that 30% of people, adults, believe that grief should last no longer than 1 to 6 months, which is very surprising because grief is a very personal experience and no two people will experience it in exactly the same way. And often with grief, what we feel when it happens is not what we expected to feel. And so that takes us by surprise. And it's impossible to put a time limit on it and say, well, you should be over it by now. There is no should when it comes to grief. I worked with a lady once whose twin sister died at a very young age, and what she expected to feel was sadness, but what she actually felt was a deep anger. And it really surprised her. And we had to do a lot of work to understand why that was and why she was feeling that way, and then to work through it and process it. And that took a lot longer than 6 months.
Are there any specific signs that people, friends and family in particular, can look out for that indicate somebody isn't dealing with grief?
Yes, I think it's really important to look out for the signs of the people not coping. If they aren't managing to cope with day-to-day things such as, leaving the house or getting out of bed, having a shower, or if you feel that somebody is cutting themselves off from friends and family, or they are just becoming completely focused on the grief and nothing else, they're not able to focus on anything else, I would say these are all signs that someone is struggling to cope and that they need help.
You're the founder, Claire, of the clients to therapist matching website, therapyfinders.co.uk. You've also put together a list of six tips or working exercises. I know we're fairly pushed for time, but can you just briefly talk us through those six exercises that people who might be listening to this, who might well be experiencing some form of grief right now, whether it's death of a loved one, death of a partner, whatever scenario from that system, would you actually just share with us some of those ways forward? The first one, of course, all about talk and communication.
Yes, absolutely. That for me, that would be the first and foremost is talk. If you can, try a close friend or a trusted family member. Just reach out. Or if you don't want to talk to somebody that's close, because sometimes people do find it difficult to talk to someone they know, reach out to a professional talking therapist who will be able to give you a safe space to process what you're going through with no judgment and the time that you need to grieve. So talking would be for me the first and foremost. Also, I found that journaling has been very helpful to people. We often have quite overwhelming feelings when it comes to grief, and sometimes we don't understand why we're feeling this way. And to get the words out onto a piece of paper can help to organize your thoughts. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to be beautifully long sentences or well-constructed sentences. It just needs to be literally a brain dump of what you're feeling and thinking. And that can often help you to process what you're going through.
Communicating thoughts.
Communicate, sorry.
No, go on. I was going to say that's a critical aspect, really, and that certainly ties in with all six of these aspects.
Yeah, it really does. Also, there's no harm in, remembering people with happy memories. Sometimes people feel that they shouldn't be laughing or, sharing happy memories that they have of people, but this can often be very helpful to somebody, to remember people within the good times. As you mentioned, before, it isn't just death where we experience grief. We can also experience grief, through the loss of a job. And so if you are experiencing grief through losing a job, then it might be helpful to try reflecting on the positive things about yourself and the things that you do well, to help you try and focus and see a way through, to maybe another job or a different avenue. So focus on the good things. And another one that I think is also really important, and we don't do enough, is just to don't be afraid to cry, or scream, or just, get the emotion out, whatever works for you. We live in a society, unfortunately, where we don't cry, we see crying as a sign of weakness, and it really isn't. It can be very cathartic. So just get the emotion out through crying or screaming. It really helps.
Absolutely. Just summarizing, talk, journaling, communicate, remember, reflect, and release. Finally, Claire, where can people actually go to find out further information about your own work with Therapy Finders?
Okay, so if you're experiencing grief and you want some more information on grief, we have a website called therapyforgriefandloss.co.uk. But if you want to connect with a therapist to help you through grief or any mental health issue that you're struggling with, you can go to therapyfinders.co.uk and you will can help get help there.
It's also worth noting that there is always a tomorrow, there is always a positive, and we need to actually focus on those and ensure that we have this journey together and ensure that there is always light at the end of the tunnel, perhaps.
Yes, yeah, definitely. There is nothing to say that you won't get over your grief, but that is also, if it takes longer than you expect it to take, that's fine. Give yourself time, accept that you are grieving and that there is no time limit on it, and it takes as long as it takes, and just be kind to yourself.
Claire Williams, specialist grief counsellor, huge thanks. And keep on keeping on, Claire.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, back in the day, the 20th century, I certainly recall the anxiety that Duncan Goodhue once used to say about his galloping alopecia and his challenges with respect to that. Also, other sporting idols, including David Armstrong. What did they both have in common, apart from the fact that they're both sports people? Well, they were under 25, and it seems that actually hair loss is something which is affecting and impacting a growing number of under 25-year-olds who are feeling anxious about the prospect of losing their hair. Now, the best person to actually speak to actually talk about this, to actually deal with the mental issues around hair loss, because she's been working with this for decades, is of course the phenomenally wonderful Dr. Sarah Jarvis. How are you, Sarah?
Oh, after an introduction like that, how could I not be wonderful?
Excellent. Okay, so let's talk a bit about this, because clearly those of us who are follicly challenged, and indeed I have had that myself from that point of view, we kind of we in a sense it's a natural process of life, etc. But under 25 does seem to be a little bit low for that point of view. And I mean, clearly one can appreciate how in an era where so much is put in terms of appearance and so on, that maybe actually there are challenges with respect to people suffering from hair loss.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I suspect people have always worried about it, but I think in this day and age of social media and so on, and people being, you know, much more visible in their social profile, there is certainly, as far as I'm concerned, much more concern out of it. So, you know, 9 in 10 18 to 24 year olds are worried about losing their hair. A third of people in this age group say that they've got increased levels of stress because they're losing their hair. A quarter have had a knock to their confidence, which is just, you know, so sad, because that's having a huge impact on their self-esteem. But also, interestingly, 1 in 5 of people in the 18 to 24 age group has anxiety, and more than 1 in 8 believe that their hair loss has triggered feelings of depression.
Mm. I mean, this research by Harley Street Hair Clinic also says that 68% of people in the UK currently experience some form of hair loss. So it's not something which is affecting the minority. It's certainly something which is problematic from that point of view. So is it just a case of saying, OK, well, just come off social media for a time and actually sort of don't worry about the whole process, or embrace the hair loss, etc.? What's the key thing that one should actually do, Sarah, if you're listening to this and you think, okay, fine, what can I do?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to think about whether it is your hair loss which is causing your anxiety, or whether there's something else going on there, whether it's something more to do with your self-esteem. You know, there's no question that for some people, having a respite from social media can make a big difference. And indeed, bearing in mind all the time that actually other people probably have got exactly the same concerns, when, as you so rightly say, this research from Harley Street Hair Clinic shows that, you know, 9 in 10 young adults are also worried about losing their hair. And I think that really does remind us that you are not alone. 1 in 4 people said they've got absolutely nobody to talk to. I think that's really sad. And among all people who've experienced or are worrying about hair loss, nearly a quarter wish they'd done something about it sooner. Now, Harley Street Hair Clinic has just launched an app called Hair Track, and that allows you to take photos of your hair from 3 different angles, from the front, the top, and the sides. And actually, in some cases, it may be that people will, although they're thinking, oh, it's getting worse, actually, if you can upload that to a timeline, some people, for quite a lot of them actually, they might well be able to have a look and say, oh, actually, when I look at it, it's actually getting better. So we've got a normal hair cycle. And normally we spend our hair spends about 3 to 5 years in the growing phase, what's called the anagen phase. And then we've got a sort of turnover, a switchover phase, which lasts a couple of weeks. And then it goes into a resting phase for about 3 months. And normally at the end of that time, that hair, which is not growing anymore, is pushed out by a new hair coming through. But there's a very, very common condition called telogen effluvium. And basically what happens there is, after a major stress, very common after childbirth, for instance, but, you know, major operation, an accident, being generally unwell, what can happen is that those older hairs will be pushed into coming to the end of their life cycle early. And that means that they are sitting there waiting to come out. So you may well find that, in the same way that, you know, normally we lose about 50 to 100 hairs a day, and it's a sort of rolling cycle, dogs will molt. And actually what's basically happening with telogen effluvium, far more hairs than normal are coming to the end of their life cycle at the same time. So you may well find that you effectively get a molting phase. The good news, though, is that a normal pattern and thickness of hair usually returns within a few months once those new hairs have become established.
I mean, I can certainly recall over the centuries, when one looks back historically, there have been so many cures for hair restoration and so on, that have been everything from rubbing your head into a cow pat onwards, basically, none of which I've actually tried, yeah, thankfully. But in terms of that, it is something which clearly has affected human beings over the centuries, let alone obviously the 21st century.
Oh, very much so. And there are an awful lot of people who are concerned about it. Now, there aren't any treatments available on the NHS. You can get private prescriptions for some medications, for a couple of medications for men, which may help. There's one called minoxidil. There's one, there's a tablet that you can take as well. The women can take minoxidil, but they can't take the tablets, not licensed for them. But you can't get those on the NHS. But of course, you know, there are now far more, if you go to the right place, hair transplants can be really, really effective. As Wayne Rooney has shown us, it does make a very significant difference. But we do need to bear in mind that they're not available on the NHS. Now, interestingly, the HairTrack app, you can download the pictures, as I say, you can scroll through and get an idea of how your hair's changing. But you can also use an in-app function, and it's managed by real people, not artificial intelligence. You can speak directly and discreetly, very importantly, to a consultant about your concerns. And then they can give you advice about, you know, what the options might be for you.
Yes, I've got to say that actually the amount of time one spends talking to chatbots or the equivalents, it almost makes one want to tear one's hair out as opposed to actually dealing
with
it.
But this is a different, I agree, very good pun. But in this case, no tearing out of hair because you'll be speaking to a real person.
Thank the Lord for that. Where can people find out further details, Sarah, about Harley Street Hair Clinic and indeed the survey and more?
We'll go on to hshairclinic.co.uk. That's hshairclinic.co.uk. You can find out all sorts of details about survey, about hair loss, about treatment options, and you can download the app directly from their front page.
It's interesting you mentioned, obviously, Wayne Rooney. I would have thought, I think Elton John also fairly noted for his change in the whole thing. Personally, I think I just have to say, what the hey, just go with it. Let's do a Patrick Stewart on the whole thing, after all.
And if that's the way you feel, that's great. But I think what this research really showed me was quite how many people are struggling with it. Now, you know, my personal feeling, my husband is does not have as full a head of hair as when we met, shall we say. But in his case, it doesn't bother him. And that's great. But the fact is, if you're one of the people where it really does, that's a different matter.
Absolutely. We'll finish with those two traditional questions, of course. Sarah, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I have had a fascinating time with you, as always. And yes, I would love to come back again.
Ever the consummate professional, Dr. Sarah Jarvis, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and have a great Easter.
And you. Pleasure as ever.
Right. Well, home improvements, house improvements. What should we be doing from that point of view? And how can we actually make our own homes more energy efficient? Well, we've got two fabulous folk to actually address this particular challenge. First of all, it's a welcome back to the Midweek Drive for the awesome talent that actually is Craig Phillips. How are you, Craig?
I'm very well. Thanks, Alex. Yourself?
Excellent. Always great to connect with your good self, of course. You were first ever Big Brother winner. You've gone from strength to strength since then. And indeed, you've built your own energy efficient home. So great stuff there. We've also got Mortgages Director of Halifax, of course. That's Kim Kinnaird. How are you, Kim?
I'm very well. Thank you, Alex.
Excellent. Craig, we'll turn to you first, because some of the sort of findings of this particular package, that over a fifth of people are now making home improvements to boost energy efficiency in their homes. Now, you, as we said, built your own energy efficient home. Was that something you'd always intended to do? Or was it a case of, well, OK, let's put this to the test?
It certainly was, yes. You know, over the 33 years being in the building and construction industry, I've built many houses and done many renovations. So I always had it in the back of my mind to build our own dream house. And Laura and I designed ours about 6 or 7 years ago, started maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But even then, it was on the forefront of our mind. Was we were building quite a large house, an unusual shape and size. We wanted to make it energy efficient. We knew we were going to be working from home. And I was well aware of the different materials that are out there on the market. So I just wanted to try and build a thing called a passive home, where it makes it pretty much airtight. Because we know, as technology has moved on, we know by making your home more airtight is going to make it more energy efficient. So designing it from scratch was, I don't want to say easy, but it's easier than a kind of a retrofit on a house, because you can choose what materials you're using with brick and block work, what type of insulation you're using. We use spray foam insulation, which filled all the cavities and dries solid and makes it airtight. Likewise with the roof, we've done a flat roof on there designed to put solar panels on the top and get our energy from the sun. The back end is a south-facing garden. So we've got a lot of the larger windows are at the back side of the house, which we knew we would get the solar coming in from the sun, magnifies it from the glazing, and then we could use electric pumps and pump that air around the rest of the house, the cold west side of the house, where it wasn't getting the sun. So the design and the thought of it was all there to try and make it energy efficient. And then when Halifax come to me with their facts and findings, the figures of their recent survey, I got really drawn into it, because over the years, I've seen people getting advances on their mortgages to do your typical extensions in your kitchens and bathrooms. And that's still happening today, you know, and I've done that myself. We all do. And I think it's a great way of improving your house and improving the value of your house. But their recent survey shown that just recently, certainly this last year or two, everyone's idea of increasing their home is about the energy performance. How can they increase it? Is it double glazed windows, triple glazed windows, new insulation in the loft space, upgrading it, you know, insulation in the floor, even layers of underlays under the carpets to help. There's a variety of different things on there. And whatever people's budgets are, you know, we've got some tips from people who are doing it themselves and only got a small budget. There's some advice and guidance. And also Kim will be able to tell you a bit more about where they can the point direction to get some financial support as well as advice through Halifax.
Well, this neatly brings us round to, of course, the survey, How Green Is Your Home, which is a home energy serving tool in which Halifax teamed up with the Energy Saving Trust to indeed provide customers with a home energy saving tool. I mean, Kim, you listened to obviously what Craig said from that point of view. This is Halifax getting in on the ground floor, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, home ownership is a massive part of the UK, and many of us aspire to own our homes, and Halifax is one of the largest lenders in the UK, and we take that responsibility really seriously, and the greening of homes and the opportunity to support customers in improving their energy efficiency is really central to that. So you mentioned the home energy saving tool. It's something I'm really proud of and really passionate about. It's a great tool working with the Energy Savings Trust where you can input your details really easily online, and it will then create a report for you explaining how green your home currently is and create a tailored plan of action for you. I've done it for myself for my home, and it's fantastic. And as Craig kind of pointed out just before, there's lots of different things that you can do, from the very inexpensive to the much more expensive. And as you said before, Alex, at the top of the conversation, you know, over a fifth of people are now wanting to make improvements for energy efficiency. And we know around one in 10 people are spending anywhere between £100 to £500 a month on home maintenance. So using tools such as the tool we've just talked about gives you an opportunity to think about where you can best spend your money and also tailor it to your budget. People shouldn't feel pressure to need to spend lots of money. We know not everybody can afford to spend money on very substantial investments, but there are those little things you can do day in, day out that will make a difference. And it's important that people can understand what those opportunities are.
That also brings us neatly around to the Green Living Reward for people who aren't necessarily looking to sell, but they basically are looking to improve their home, etc. And indeed, yeah, there are cashback offers available for customers, presumably.
Yes, there are. Our Green Living Award offers cash back to borrowers who are financing a range of energy efficiency improvements with Halifax. And that can be anything from insulation through to double glazing, heat pumps, solar PV, battery storage. So that does absolutely help when people are making those more considered investments. And we've also recently partnered with Octopus Energy as well. So for Halifax homeowners looking to replace or upgrade their existing central heating, you know, that they can make it a more energy efficient choice with implementing a heat source pump, and obviously we can help with the financing of that. And then finally as well, Alex, there's lots of other grants and support available with the government, so I would always kind of recommend homeowners access those websites for understanding what might be available in their area, in their part of the UK.
And Craig, returning back to yourself again, I think we've had this conversation before, but the original Big Brother, the house wasn't as energy efficient as perhaps it might have seemed, really. So presumably that was not part of your design.
It certainly wasn't my design, no. And it wouldn't comply to any building regulations that are out there for homes that are built today. Luckily for me, it was the summer of 2000. So the weather was on our side when we were in there. I wouldn't have liked to have to live in the Big Brother house in wintertime, that's for sure.
Yeah, very true. So people listen to this, Craig, and they think, oh, well, that's Craig's genius. I mean, he's just building sort of fantastic. So he's all for that sort of point of view. What advice would you give them if somebody was actually saying, well, it's all very well, Kim, saying about all these things that's available. What should they actually do to take that first step to getting their home more energy?
I think do visit the Halifax website, of course, and follow the links on there. I went on there myself last night, and the tool that Kim was saying about how green your home is, you fill in all the details. Likewise, if you look at your EPC, your energy performance certificate, and get a better understanding of what your house is built from, what materials is already within it, and how you can advance on that, and what sort of directions you can go in. The tool at the end of it does give you an indication of what improvements you can make and what kind of, and then it's down to yourself then, what budget do you have to do that? You know, and I know people are finding it very difficult at the moment because the cost of living has gone up in lots of different avenues or lots of different angles for us. But the way I look at this is it's speculate to accumulate. You know, you have to make this investment into your home, want to get the benefits out of it, whether it's short term or long term. You know, we've got videos online where it teaches people how to do small jobs. Starting off very small, doing the tiny little changes can make a really, really big difference. You know, just changing the light bulbs, turning your thermostats down, you know, insulating your water tank. You know, if you have a little look at your, you might have an electric water boiler there that isn't very insulated very well. You can buy insulated jackets for that for under £20. And, you know, it does make a big difference. It really, really does make a big difference. If you've got gaps in the wall anywhere from pipes that have been drilled out, waste pipes, etc., sealing them with silicone sealant, they're repairs that can be done for under £5, but do make a big difference over a long period of time. So I say start off small, learn a little bit more about what your ability is and where you need professional help. See what financial help is there available for you or individuals and go from there. You know, once you start making these improvements, it's not something that we're telling you've got to get them done by the end of the month. You know, people are planning now for what they're doing next winter. People have, you know, taken out 5, 10, 20, even 30-year mortgages. It's probably the biggest investment most people will make personally in their entire lives, you know. So it's in their best interest to safeguard it and preserve their house. It's going to make their living more comfortable and more healthier within their home. And most importantly as well, it's keeping value to our house, which is very important to do so.
And finally, Kim, where can people go to find out further details from Halifax about these fantastic aspects that are available?
So I would recommend anybody that's interested in finding out more to go to the Halifax website, the main Halifax Bank website, and it will direct you from there.
Fantastic. Craig, always a delight to share some thoughts with you. Sweet, you know, good stuff on home improvement. Craig Phillips, our first ever Big Brother winner, as we said, and of course, presenter extraordinaire of renovation shows, etc. He built his own energy efficient home. Yeah. And of course, Kim Kinnaird, mortgages director at Halifax. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And keep on insulating.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having
Alex.
Us.
I could climb a river before I could make this go. It's like I died and I am where I want to go. You could pray for the future or you could pray to the past. But there's nothing like the present, and it's never gonna last. Why don't you breathe? Don't say a word. Be whatever you feel. Breathe. Don't say a word. Just breathe. This could be your savior. Oh, this could be your demise. What will it be? Through the night, breathe. Don't say a word. Breathe.